Fill up in the hot house, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
Hey guys, welcome back to Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven.
Mimi Steven, the incomparable Mimi Steven. So, let's see here. What do we have to talk about this week? I have Ted Bundy. Apparently, Ted Bundy's childhood home is haunted, and it's either by Ted Bundy or somebody else. So,
was it
got
haunted
that for you.
Before Ted Bundy lived there?
Shit, I don't know.
Oh. Was it haunted while Ted Bundy was there?
I don't know that either. I wish they had interviewed his mom and been like, so.
Okay.
Did that things go bump in the night when you guys lived there? Because if they did, then maybe it was haunted.
Maybe. But he's pretty creepy.
He is creepy. He's probably one of the creepiest serial killers. I mean, at least if you looked at Jeffrey Dahmer and, you know, thought to yourself, well, is there something, like, off about this guy? You could probably say, you know, a resounding yes. There's something a little different about the way this guy looks and the way that he interacts with other people. But Ted Bundy was just so suave. You know, he was just so suave and so genteel. And he wrote, like, a pamphlet or something on rape.
Oh.
I mean, he was really, like... deep undercover, like the dude was legit a serial killer that worked with government organizations.
Wow.
And yeah, flew totally under the radar. Amazing.
Really amazing.
Yeah, so that's what I've got. What do you have this week?
What do I hit? Oh, I'm doing Seven Bridges of Grant Park in South Milwaukee, and it's, I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's really a beautiful place. And I was there a long time ago with a former boyfriend, and he carved a heart with our initials on one of the bridges. So
nice.
I'm there forever.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've been to too many Milwaukee County parks unless it's to go and have some really shitty fishing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really the only reason why we go.
Okay. Well, it's really pretty if you ever want to go, especially in like the fall.
Yeah.
With the colors. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of places like that. Holy Hill is really nice in the fall, too.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Going up there. Yeah. So, this week, first and foremost on my list, and it's actually on the bottom of my list, but I'm going to put it first and foremost on my list, is to issue a correction from last week. Apparently, I said that Boston was a state. So, Boston is not a state. Massachusetts is a state, so I have it written here, correct, on air, Boston is not a state, you idiot. So there it is. So what's been going on this week?
Well, anything? Just a lot of running around.
Yeah.
You know, kids need this and that. At school, there was a little girl, maybe K-5.
And okay.
She just came up to me and hugged me. And that was such a nice feeling. It made my day.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else is going on? The big thing. My car went kaput.
Oh.
My engine light came on, so I took it over, and it turned out to be the solenoid in the transmission. So that was expensive.
Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't sound cheap.
No. It was a bummer.
Yeah, that's no good.
And that's about it.
Yeah, around, let's see. This is from a while ago, but they have a free comic book day every year on the first Saturday in May.
Where?
Any comic book store.
I did not know that.
Basically. I'm a huge nerd, so I gravitate to where my flock is, and
right.
My flock happens to be nerdy people, but Yeah, you basically nerd. Right? Nerd Nation. We went to Lost World of Wonders, which is in Milwaukee. It is by far my favorite comic book store because they have a wider selection and it's a larger store, so they get more books.
Okay.
And you basically just go in there and you look on the counters and they have free comic books lined up. So, like, this year they had, like, a Wonder Woman cover. They had a Buffy the Vampire Slayer cover because it's the 20th anniversary of that show.
Oh,
I can't believe I'm that old.
Already? Wow.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's been 20 years.
I can't believe it either.
And then they had, I think, a Justice League one. They had a couple of, like, cartoony ones.
Mm-hmm.
So there's pretty much a little bit of something for everybody.
Cool.
You know, all tastes.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool.
Did you get anything? Pretty cool.
I didn't get anything at Lost World of Wonders.
Mm-hmm.
I did get an Iron Fist exclusive from, I believe it's the San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh.
And he's gold. His little okay. fists are see-through. So I talked the guy down at the counter to $18.
Hey, all
right. And, yeah, I haggled. It was good.
Cool.
So yeah, I got that, and I got a couple of issues of, well, not issues, the graphic novels of, Chew, which is a graphic novel about this guy who works for the Food and Drug Administration, and he's sent out on all these cases, and he is expected to eat pieces of the crime scene so that he can see what actually happened.
Gross.
I don't know what they call him exactly. I haven't figured out yet if it's a cybopath or a chebopath.
Oh.
But apparently it's somebody who can eat things and then see. So eventually it goes down a very dark road where the lead character, Tony, is actually eating human remains and seeing how people died. And then, yeah,
does
going
he
from there.
Start liking it?
He never likes it.
Okay.
No, he never likes it. He just kind of dons the cape, as all it were, and just kind of rolls with it. So I got two issues of that, and then I got the original collection of Jessica Jones, because I love Alias.
Yeah,
I'm a fan.
Okay.
So yeah, I picked that up. Otherwise, I didn't dip into, like, any of the old bins. I mm-hmm. like to go into, like, the $25 or dollar bins.
Right.
You know, and kind of root around, but I didn't get a chance to do that this year. But regardless, you know, found lots of cool stuff, met
good.
Lots of nerds.
Good.
It was good. There was a nerdy time to be had by
yep.
all.
I was just going to say that.
Yep. Let's see. The other thing that I did this week was I watched a really interesting documentary called The American Experience, War of the Worlds.
Okay.
It's basically about Orson Welles and how he reads H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds live on air in October of 1938. And, you know, it's just really funny because it changed the way that broadcasts are done. Back then, you know, you weren't required to do any sort of disclaimer or mm-hmm. anything before you started. You just kind of, they started recording and,
right.
you know, everybody who had a radio right. just sat and listened.
Right.
But after this, because there was such widespread pandemonium, they had to do something because people legitimately thought that there were aliens that were taking over the world
yes,
and, like, zapping
did.
People with rays.
Yes, they did. They terrified.
Yeah, I don't even know that terrified is the right word. I feel like they were just, like, horrified.
Yeah, people were,
you know, like,
in terror, and what do we do? And
yeah, it was pretty bad. So yeah, apparently most people at the time that War of the Worlds started were listening to Edgar Bergen and his dummy Charlie McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that show, I guess, went to some sort of intermission, like a musical interlude, at around 8:15.
Okay.
And then everybody started spinning their radio dials, and they wound up on War of the Worlds because somebody was actually talking. And they were like, oh, well, I'll listen to this because it's not music. Well, then when they started listening to that, they were like, holy shit, what is going on? What am I missing? And the worst thing about it was laid out in such a way that the broadcast sounded like a news reporter
mm-hmm.
reporting what he had seen, and then they would go to, like, some musical interlude, and then they would come back, and they would give more information. And so, I mean, people just lost their minds.
Right.
So, yeah, after that point, the networks had to agree to be more cautious. And there was an FCC investigation, but I don't think anything ever came of that. Yeah, I think it was just like, so this was shitty.
Yeah, well.
And you scared American people, just all over America, people lost their minds.
Well, that's when Orson Welles really became Orson Welles.
Yes, yes, he did. So yeah, I don't know. Really interesting documentary. If you have Netflix, you should definitely check it out.
I shall have to do that one time.
Before it disappears. Yeah. Goes the way of the dinosaur, like so many other great shows.
I have a Charlie McCarthy doll at home.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it has the little tuxedo and everything.
Oh, is it creepy as fuck?
It is. That's why he's in a box.
He's in a box. Yeah. Yeah. That seems like a good place for Charlie to be.
Yeah.
Because I definitely don't want to deal with Charlie making it out here to our podcast and hiding in my house and then brutally murdering me.
Well, actually, Jane, while I sleep. You do have a lot of stuffed things.
They're not dolls.
I think he'd fit right in.
They're not dolls.
These are kind of like dolls.
No. Walter is a peccary pig. He is gorgeous. He does not at all resemble a doll.
So, do you have a little thing about dolls?
I've never liked dolls. Every doll that anybody has ever given me, and it stopped when I was around, like, 10 or 11 because of this. But I would take them, and I would, like, strip all of their clothes off and just throw them in a corner.
Oh.
And that's where they would stay. And I think that maybe I thought that it would take them a while to find their clothes if they came alive to do something terrible to me. So.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. No, I don't.
I am
never been a doll person.
I love dolls. I've always loved dolls.
Yeah, there's something about those cold, dead eyes, just and little kid faces.
Well, the Amish believe that if their kids have dolls that have faces and eyes on them, that spirits or demons can come through the dolls.
Really?
So yeah. That's so if their kids don't have faces on their dolls.
Huh. I am sure that there is a lot to learn about that. So, you know, future episode of Haunt Heads.
There you go.
If you're the doll person, then go ahead and talk about dolls, and I'll sit here in the corner and shake and rock back and forth.
Annabelle.
I got 30 minutes in, and I was like, nope.
In case you people out there in Podland don't know who Annabelle is, she was a haunted doll that did a lot of bad things.
Yeah, no. Did you see the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you watch it from the beginning to the end?
Oh, yeah.
God. No. Half hour in. I said, that's okay. I can say that I watched a half hour
of this. It was on either last night or the night before, too.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Well, what am I talking about? We have cable. They always play the same damn thing.
Yeah.
Every day. Like, if I have to watch 300 one more time, I'm just gonna lose it.
Yeah, that's on a lot.
I'm gonna lose it.
Me too. I don't like that one.
You get to a point where you start being able to quote movies.
Yeah.
And even though I own 300, I've probably only watched it twice, but I see it more on TV, and then I'm like, quoting.
I've actually never seen it from beginning to end.
Oh, really?
But I've seen little bits and pieces, so I could probably put it all together.
I always tune in when they have the wall of bodies.
Okay.
And then they're like, they're all lined up behind the wall, and then the Persians or whatever get closer and closer, and then they tip over the wall of bodies. So every time I turn it on, that's the section that they're at. And I'm like, I've seen the whole movie, but that's right where it starts off every single time.
I always get to the one where they're on a mountain and there's a very mangled and deformed person begging the general to take him into his army and let him fight, and the general won't let him.
Well, right, because he can't raise his shield.
Yeah. So that's where I always come in.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's a good movie. I just don't need to see it 72 times a month.
No. Nope.
You know, I really don't need to. I'm a huge fan of Frank Miller. That's the gentleman that did 300.
Oh, okay.
The graphic novel.
Okay.
He also did Sin City.
Mm-hmm. I've seen two Sin Cities.
Yeah. So, I mean, the visuals mm-hmm. are very similar throughout all of those. So,
yeah.
Yeah, he's a talented fella. And, you know, I like his work. It's just, come on, people. Like, how much do I pay a month? Like, $200 a month? Like, can we please turn on something different? I mean, even give me something with subtitles. I don't care. I'll mm-hmm. sit down and I'll watch a movie with subtitles just so long as I don't have to watch this thing again. Yeah. All right. So who went first last time?
I did.
You went first.
Yes.
So do you want me to go first this time?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Abso-flippin-lutely. All right. Guys, excuse the rustling because we have things set up in here in such a way that there is hardly enough room on this table that we're working on. All right. So the first little piece that I kind of pulled on Bundy, just in case you guys don't know who he is, I don't know if there's anybody in the world who doesn't know who Ted Bundy is, unless they've, like, just been born. Or, you know, I mean, if you're living under a rock.
Well, he's pretty popular.
He really, I mean... As far as serial killers go, Ted Bundy is probably one of the most popular, like the most talked about.
Mm-hmm.
People often talk about Richard Ramirez and the Green River Killer, mm-hmm. Gary Ridgway, as well. But and of course, you know, Dahmer and Gein,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, yeah, people talk about them a lot. But Bundy is by far, I think, one of the most prolific serial killers. Probably not ever, but up there. Because I'm trying to think of who they had, like, in Europe. I mean, they had Chikatilo. He was pretty...
I don't know who that is.
He was pretty crazy. Yeah, I think Bundy is probably up there, at least in North America.
Well, H.H. Holmes. I think he's said to have killed 200 people or something.
Oh, really?
He's at 200? I might have to do H.H. Holmes.
I was going to say, yeah, do the murder castle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's an awesome story. Yeah, I think Bundy's total was 36.
Oh, that's it? I thought he was...
Well, there are some people that speculate that it was over 100, but okay. I think that they have verified that it's around 36.
All righty.
So not as prolific as you thought. But, all right, so the first little bit I've got here is an article by John Nordheimer. It was a special for the New York Times in 1989 in January, and it basically talks about Bundy's execution and gives you a little bit of info about him. So I'll just kind of take some little snippets. Bundy was put into the electric chair on January 24th. He was pronounced dead at 7:16 a.m., after 2,000 volts of electricity surged through his body. Apparently, Bundy spent the last few days confessing to 16 other killings, he told us to police detectives, who came from the states of Washington, Utah, Idaho, Colorado. You know, Bundy was kind of all over the place, so they wanted to kind of square up those cases before he was put to death. So, yeah, they questioned Bundy about those other murder investigations, and some of the confessions were made in killings in which the authorities had not connected him, so it's good that they sat down and talked to him about it. Federal and state officials still link him to a dozen or more similar crimes since his spree began in February 1974 in Seattle. Bundy was a killer who stalked victims in the Pacific Northwest in the mid-1970s, and he terrorized university communities, selecting co-eds for abduction from campuses at night or crowded parks in the daytime when their defenses were lowered and they were in familiar settings. That's when Bundy would strike. Accounts of witnesses and other evidence in crimes he was believed to have committed showed that he typically used his good looks and soft-spoken charm, often bandaging an arm or a leg to gain sympathy or help to lure them to their death. Now, if that sounds familiar, Then you're probably flashing back a little bit to Silence of the Lambs.
That was on last night and I watched it.
When Buffalo Bill is like, can you help me put this sofa mm-hmm. in my van?
Right.
Was she a great big fat person? Yeah. I love that movie. I love it. Recently Hannibal was on. Not as good.
I have never seen Hannibal.
Yeah, not as good. I was really kind of disappointed when they came out with Hannibal, because I was like, really? You're not going to have Jodie Foster come back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might even be the reason why I didn't watch it, because
I knew
it would be so different.
Now, I mean, who was the real star of that movie? Clearly Anthony Hopkins.
Absolutely.
Clearly. He was the clear winner, but...
She was the second, because she worked with him really well.
Well, in the relationship that they had,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the film. I mean, you're going to bring in a completely different actress, and she tried to even talk like Jodie Foster did, and it was just ludicrous. I couldn't.
Yeah, I
couldn't watch it.
I'm glad I didn't.
Let's see.
Although now I might have to.
Yeah, just because it's bad.
Right.
Let's see. Theodore Robert Bundy. It's kind of weird to read his name like that. Theodore was born to a young single Philadelphia woman who raised him in Tacoma, Washington. But his mother, whose name was Louise, said that there was never any shred of evidence in her son's first 28 years before he became a murder suspect for the first time to hint any behavior that was freaky or strange. So she didn't sense anything about it. I don't know. People who knew Ted Bundy in his early years say that he was a Boy Scout. And he loved children. And he was like a B student. The year that the murders began in Seattle, he was the assistant director of the Seattle Crime Prevention Advisory Commission and wrote a pamphlet for women on rape prevention.
How old was he?
So, 29?
Okay.
29, I think.
Now, you may not know this, but did he have any head injuries or accidents?
Oh, I don't know. But that's totally a thing, you know.
I know that is. That's why I asked.
If kids get dropped on their heads or whatever,
mm-hmm.
they say that any sort of head trauma can result. It can
totally alter who you are, your personality.
Yeah. I mean, I was dropped several times. Numerous times. Too many to count. But... Yeah, no, it doesn't say anything about that part of his early life.
Okay.
So here's what Bundy said in a 1986 interview with the New York Times. If anyone considers me a monster, that's just something that they'll have to confront in themselves. For people to want to condemn someone, to dehumanize someone like me, is a very popular and effective, understandable way of dealing with with fear and a threat that is incomprehensible. So that's what Bundy had to say about the whole situation.
Okay.
I just kind of wanted to put that out there just in case anybody had never, you know, met Ted. Very charming fella, that Teddy Bundy.
Have you ever met him?
I never have. I never have, but I have been a true crime fan for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean... Ted Bundy, for me, is up there with, Ramirez, the Zodiac Killer, the Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway, Dahmer, Gein, Manson. I mean, he's really, you know, he's kind of up there in the upper echelon of serial killers or people who are generally just, you know, fucked up.
It's amazing that he kept it hidden.
It is. It is. I don't really find it amazing that so much that Ted Bundy was able to keep it hidden because he was so suave. But like I said, with people like Jeffrey Dahmer, I mean, Jeffrey Dahmer was keeping shit in his locker at work.
Yeah.
Like pieces of people that he was keeping in his locker at work. And everybody was just like, okay, woohoo, let's go make some chocolate. And nobody ever smelled anything weird. Nobody ever said anything to him.
Well, you know, they found a finger in a vat of chocolate once.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
They did, but they didn't link that to anything.
No.
That makes you wonder, though.
It does make me wonder.
It was around the time that he was there?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was around the time he was there.
I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe
it is. Maybe that's a thing. So, let's see here.
Chocolate fingers.
Oh. Yeah, so that turns me off chocolate for the next little while. Thanks for that one, buddy. Let's see. The other thing that I wanted to note that I am slightly irritated by is the fact that in this new movie that will be coming out about Ted Bundy, they've decided to cast Zac Efron. And I just can't get behind that. I don't know. He's going to have to do an awful lot to, like, change his mannerisms and his personality. Yeah, because I don't think...
Well, maybe this will be the time that he proves his worth as an actor.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be... I don't know. I feel like it's going to be hard for him, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
That's how, you know, really good people become really good actors. Well, you know, they get the one role that changes things for them. So
yeah,
let's hope.
Let's cross our fingers and hope he doesn't bastardize it.
Yeah.
My piece this week is on Bundy's childhood home. I'm sure that you guys have seen this online somewhere. It's been reported by everybody. You know, you can't flick through your Facebook feed without seeing it a half dozen times. I guess his childhood home is reportedly haunted. The stories follow the reports of the haunting by the person who originally purchased the house and the contractor who was called in to, you know, rebuild and update. So, let's see here.
Okay, quick question.
Yes.
So, after he was caught, they sold the house and somebody actually bought it?
Yeah, the house had been sold, I believe, a couple of times.
Oh, wow.
And actually, the only reason why the guy who purchased the house this time around realized whose house it was he went over and he talked to the neighbors. And he said, you know, who, just out of curiosity, who lived in this house, you know, before I bought it? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, it was, you know, Ted Bundy's mom. And Bundy, you know, lived there from the time he was 9 until, I think, 18 or 19. So.
Okay.
Yeah, the neighbors knew all about it, but the people who were buying the house just didn't, I don't think they knew. Or maybe some of them knew and they just didn't care.
Okay.
I mean... You know, it wasn't the site of any murder by Bundy.
Right.
Like, he didn't bring people home and kill them. His mother wasn't a psycho who brought people home and killed them.
Right.
You know, so it I feel like the energy in there probably isn't from a murder by Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's other energy, but... I don't know.
Okay, interesting.
It's weird. Ted Bundy was born November 24th in 1946 in Burlington, Vermont. He raped and murdered young women in several states, and he's been connected to at least 36 murders since that time. Some people do think, as I mentioned before, that number could be 100 or more. But they just don't have the information to back that up. Bundy was a serial killer, he was a rapist, he was a burglar, and he was a necrophile, so he was a delightful fellow. He was arrested in August of 1975 in Salt Lake City for failure to stop for a police officer in his little Volkswagen Beetle. And a search of his car revealed a ski mask, a crowbar, handcuffs, trash bags, and an ice pick, along with some other items that the police believed to be a burglary toolkit. And then in 1989, he was executed in Florida's electric chair. So his childhood home is located in Tacoma, Washington. A gentleman by the name of David Truong purchased the home intending to flip it, but he didn't research the property at all, and he was unsure of the history. It's a small blue house, roughly about 1,400 square feet, built in 1946, the same year that Bundy was born in Vermont. And then the Bundy family took ownership of the home in 1955. Louise Bundy was no longer living in the home in 1989 when Bundy was put to death.
Was she dead or was she in a home?
No, she moved out of the home. Okay. I'm not sure if she went into assisted living or I just read that she moved out.
Is she dead now?
I don't know. I'm unsure about that as well.
Okay. Yeah. I feel bad for her.
Bundy was 9 years old when his mother moved into the house with him. And apparently his bedroom was either on the ground level or in the basement. I guess there was a little girl that came over to the house to play or something. There were friends that she played with, and they were also mutual friends of Bundy. Mm-hmm. And she said that his room was down the basement stairs and on the left.
Okay.
But, you know, they speculate it was either on the main floor or in the basement. Some believe that Bundy actually started killing at the age of 14. Anne-Marie Burr was 8 years old and was abducted from her home in August of 1961. So, although Bundy denied that this was his first victim, a lot of people think that he had something to do with it. DNA testing in 2011 was unable to link Bundy to the missing girl.
Did they ever find her body?
You know, it didn't tell me if they did or not.
Okay.
Yeah, that wasn't in there. Now we move on to modern day. The contractor, his name is Casey Clapton. He was hired in October to remodel the house. And he often brings his 11-year-old daughter with him because he'll dictate things that need to be done in the house and she'll write them down. So she takes notes for her dad.
Nice.
Yeah, isn't that nice of her? Mm-hmm. That was really nice. So she takes notes, and so Clapton claims that his daughter one day just would not enter the house and started crying and freaking out and said that she didn't like the energy in the house, so she refused to go in there. She refuses to be left alone. Yeah, she just doesn't like the feeling in there. See, so then Clapton returns with a demo crew, and some of the crew members did agree that the house had a strange feeling to it, but Clapton just kept dismissing the claims because he was like, come on, guys,
got a job you know, to we're do. A bunch let's of grown get it men. Done.
Come on, pick up your sledgehammers, let's go. So yeah, he just dismissed it until he spoke with a neighbor. And then he found out who the previous owners were. Now, I guess this guy is super big into true crime and was just, like, psyched that he got to work on the Bundy house.
Okay.
So it didn't affect him at all until certain things started happening around the house that were unexplained. So electronics would stop working. Tools would be unplugged. There was an incident of heavy furniture falling over. So there was, like, one of those dressers built into the wall, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess it was too heavy for one guy to pull out on his own. But this thing managed to pull itself all the way out from the wall and then tip over.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I guess they were downstairs and they heard it. And then they ran upstairs to see what the crash was. And they found the dresser face down on the floor.
All right, well, somebody was angry.
Somebody was doing something. Workers also found help me written on a window in the basement. Apparently there's some sort of screen protector over the window mm-hmm. downstairs, so they would have had to remove that and then write it on the window on the outside and then put the screen protector back on. So, not really unexplained, like, explainable if somebody had mm-hmm. time to do that and wanted to freak people out, right. But, yeah, so there's that.
I wonder if the original blueprint of the house matches up with what's there now.
Oh.
You know, like, could there be a secret room
or something? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Or a bump in the floor where something might have been buried in the corridor.
You never know. Honestly, I mean, you know, houses change hands so many times throughout their lives and, you know, unless they're burnt to the ground or whatever, somebody else winds up living there. So
right. Well, you know, did his mom ever remarry?
I don't believe so.
Because she...
I don't know if she maybe had love interests or whatever.
She probably, you know, worked full-time and
yeah.
He was probably left alone a lot, so.
Probably, yeah. Well, I mean, if they believe that this one little girl that went missing was his doing.
Right.
I mean, you know, maybe it was him, and they just didn't connect the dots, you know.
They could do a ground scan see if anything.
They could. I feel like that's something that they probably would have done if he was under suspicion.
Well, do we have the technology then?
Well, no, but they have it now.
Right.
So, I mean, you would think that in, well, not now, like 2011. So, you know, they used DNA evidence. They tried to connect it.
Well, if they haven't, they should.
They should. Yes, they absolutely should. Yeah, so that grate made it very difficult, would have made it very difficult, is basically what it says, to write on the window mm-hmm. in the way that it was. The house would be locked up after the day's work, and they had an alarm system, so they would set the alarm, and then they would leave. And then when they came back in the morning, they would find all of the kitchen cabinets and drawers pulled open. They found the word leave written in drywall dust on a bedroom floor, but there were no footprints around it.
Cool.
So there's that. The like I said, the contractor thinks that it's eerie, but he's not deterred mm-hmm. from doing what he needs to do just because he's like, whatever. Yeah. You know, if it is the ghost of Ted Bundy or whatever, the guy right. is probably super stoked that
he gets to work on the house. And up to this point, nothing was really too violent.
Right. So then the people that were working on the site, they just couldn't, they were having a really hard time going back to the work site every day. So the solution was the contractor got a hold of two local pastors, and they blessed the space. And then the workers all took quotes from the Bible and penciled them onto the walls, and then the walls were painted. So just to try to, you know, ward off that evil energy or whatever energy remains in there.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the haunting of Bundy's childhood home. I don't know if it's necessarily true or not, but...
I don't know.
Definitely interesting.
Yep. I don't think I'll be traveling there. That seems too far away.
Okay, Mimi, so what do you have for us?
So today I'm talking about Seven Bridges at Grant Park in South Milwaukee. Enter this wild wood and view the haunts of nature. Mm-hmm. That's what's written on the entrance to the trails. It's foretelling what is to come. Or is it meant as something else? You decide. There have been many suicides and murders that have taken place in this park. People hanging themselves, jumping off of bridges, and or violently murdered.
Really?
Da, 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 da. Huh.
I'm interested. Okay. I've never even heard of this.
Yeah, well, it's technically isn't that much about it, but I got a few good stories. It's something that we could go to
oh, yeah.
some night with
yeah, a recorder it's pretty close.
And mm-hmm. see what's going on. So, there have been stories of glowing balls of light, disembodied voices, screeching, and even a creature that looks like a cross between a praying mantis and a human. However, I could not find any story, actual story that somebody told about seeing this creature.
Oh.
But in one blog or blurb, they mentioned that multiple people have seen it. But oh. I couldn't find one actual story that was printed about it, so who knows.
That's strange, because usually with that kind of stuff you get at least a couple of eyewitness accounts that cement it.
Yeah, and I guess people in the area who have lived there a long time are like, well, I don't know what that's all about. I don't
oh
so hmm. I don't know where these crazy people are coming up with these ideas. Yeah. But maybe the people that live around there just never went in there.
Yeah, maybe.
Anywho, okay. So, let's see. If you go into the park between the hours of 9:30 p.m. and 12 a.m., but do not park your car in there because you will get ticketed, you will see colored lights, you'll hear laughter and screaming, and if you go deeper into the woods, you will start to hear footsteps. And as the footsteps get closer and closer to you, you'll start hearing deep breathing.
Oh.
When the footsteps are right near you, you will begin to feel uneasy, as though there's an evil presence surrounding you.
Oh.
Could it be the suicide victims? Or could it be something more?
Yeah.
Like how I had those little words.
Yeah.
A witness to a paranormal event said that they were on one of the bridges when they saw a man following them very closely behind them, like really close, uncomfortably close.
Huh.
He was about 60, wearing what appeared to be clothes from the 1840s. He was so close, the couple was so uncomfortable, they got upset and turned around. "Why are you following us? Why are you following us?" And the man only smiled evilly. A woman who was also on the bridge at the same time asked them, "Who are you talking to?" They said, "The man." She said, "What man?" They turned around and there's nobody there. So the couple, who was very disconcerted, and like, you know, what's going on here?
Like they decided,
they decided to do a little research on the park. They found that between the years of 1835 and 1841, people in the area who died, because it really wasn't formed as a town yet, they buried them in that area where the park now stands. Until about 1842, when the first church and the cemetery were built. So in July of 2009, a group of five people went to Grant Park's main bridge where many alleged suicides and murders took place. One woman in the group saw a blue mist in the forest where it's reported that a woman was raped and her body dumped by two men.
Hmm.
The group then used dowsing rods that began to move furiously in all directions. They crossed each other, they moved up and down and in circles. Then two of the people in the group got hit in the face by the dowsing rods.
Oh.
Now, was it the dowsing rods that did it? Like a spiritual moving the dowsing rods? Or was it really the person holding
human
it?
Error.
So, you decide. After this experience, the group was looking at a ravine when white orbs appeared and floated around the ravine. Two of the group became dizzy on the bridge and they had a hard time breathing. Two other people in 2009 had similar experiences. Person number one saw white lights in the woods and a lot of moving shadows, dark shadows. The woods were also eerily quiet and still. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came a really huge breeze or gust of wind that just... And then with that wind came a lot of strange and eerie noises. Person number two saw a floating lady in white, just floating around, in 2011, after a full moon, so we should go when there's a full moon. A person went to the main bridge with an EVP recorder. He heard a threatening male voice say, "Get out!" Then a softer panicked voice say, "Look, he'll kill you." As he was looking around, he saw yellow eyes peering at him. So he left. And that's mainly the stories that I have right now. There wasn't much good stories I could find, but I think it'll be a lot of fun if we just go on our own and especially around a full moon.
I mean, we can totally go and bring a recorder and you know, I have a digital recorder that's really good, so we can do that. We can open up like an episode with it and then do color commentary.
I love it.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, okay. That could be one of our first trips because it's right here.
Yes, very close. Very, very close.
Yeah.
Yep. So, let's see. What else do we have to add this week? Do you have anything coming up that you're excited about? Or
let's see. Well, school's almost over. Yay, freedom.
Something to be excited about.
Oh, I do have something. My oldest son graduates from WCTC.
Nice.
With honors. Yay.
Yay.
And my youngest son is graduating high school.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter Sophie moved back home from college, and she found an apartment here in Milwaukee, so that'll be nice to have her really close.
Yep.
And that's about all I have going on. Next week is kind of quiet, just a lot of school stuff going on. Hopefully all the kids are healthy and I don't have to worry about anything.
Right. Knock on some wood for that one.
Knock, knock, knock. and no more car problems, please.
Yep. Pray to the God of vehicles and
We were saving up to get a new garage door. So now we gotta start saving up for the new garage door again.
You know, that's like being a homeowner too. Like I've noticed in the last 5 or 6 years that every time you get prepared, you know, you're going to save up for something, you're gonna do it, then something else happens.
That's right.
It seems like it's always cars and homes.
Yeah.
That you're just shafted either way. You know, you think you're fine and then...
Absolutely.
Let's see, what do I have going on? Corvus Review is going to be releasing its spring-summer issue pretty soon here. So I think the window closes the 31st of May.
Okay.
At midnight. So at that point, I will be buried in submissions and... accept rejects and all that good stuff. And then I have to sit down and put the final issue together. But I've done it many, many, many times. And, you know,
and
it's just kind of... Yeah, and I mean, you know, I enjoy it and it's just kind of second nature now. So, yeah, I just got to sit down and pop
that
together.
How many years have it been running now?
I started it in... Let's see, I graduated in 2013. I believe I started it in 2014, but close to the end of 2014. So it's been going for a few years now.
Okay, good.
It's been going pretty good. So yeah, shout out to all my my Corvus peeps and all the people that I've published in the past. You guys are awesome.
Great.
But yeah, other than that, I don't think I have anything else for this week. I have nothing else to apologize for. thanks guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. You have a great day.
Bye everyone.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews, because your reviews will help us improve, and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show. It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening and stay spooky.